Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to talk college hockey. This is USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com. USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. Be a part of the conversation. Give us a call now or message us on Twitter at USCHO. This is USCHO Live.
Good evening and welcome to USCHO Live for Tuesday, January 13th, 2015. I'm Ed Treschker. We'll be joined shortly by Jim Connolly. Our guests scheduled tonight on the episode are Bowling Green coach Chris Bergeron. His Falcons are at number 7 in this week's USCHO.com poll. Got the second best winning percentage in the WCHA, which right now has quite a bit of disparity in the number of games played among the teams. And then after that, Michigan head coach Red Berenson. His Wolverines are in first place in the Big Ten. And last weekend, that sweep of Minnesota gave Coach Berenson wins numbers 799 and 800. That joins him in the rarefied company of Ron Mason and Jerry York. And it'll be interesting to hear his take on that as well, Jim.
Yeah, I really look forward to talking to Red Berenson. Last week we had Jerry York on the show, which is great. I mean, you're talking about back-to-back weeks. We're talking to the two winningest active coaches in college hockey, and obviously Red Berenson celebrating one fantastic milestone. That I got to tell you, looking at a weekend, you're hosting Minnesota, an unbelievable team with a great power play and a great offense at home, and I wasn't thinking that they were going to get it last week, but their team obviously played some great hockey, and congratulations to Red, and I really look forward to talking to him tonight.
Yeah, it would be interesting to talk to John Lucia after that weekend, although he's usually not available on Tuesday evenings. But, you know, when your team puts up 5 goals in a game like the Gophers did on Saturday night, you expect you're going to win, but then if you give up 7, chances are you're not going to win many games at all.
And that's one of the scary things about Michigan. I think that they have a secretly potent offense. They can explode for goals. I saw them when they came out to UMass Lowell, and that's a very good Lowell team that they knocked off. And that was a game where Lowell said if we scored 4 goals against them, we'd expect to win. They got crushed. They lost 8-4 because Michigan's offense just started shooting from all angles and scoring from all angles. And I think they just have so much offensive talent. And we'll talk a little bit more with Red about that, as well as about some of his memories from 800 wins and a lot of great seasons behind the bench in Ann Arbor tonight. But you're right. If you're Minnesota, you have to be shaking your head saying, well, we did what we wanted to do. We scored goals. We scored 8 goals in the weekend. You think that if you score 8 goals and balance it out 3-5, you might have a chance of coming away with a win, and they got nothing.
You know, it'd be interesting also if there's an opportunity to find out from Red his views on how the college game has changed and grown. Back in 1962, I think he was a junior at the time for Michigan. Anyway, he was on the Michigan team in 1962 that was in the Frozen Four before it was called the Frozen Four in Utica, New York, in the Utica Memorial Auditorium where Utica College plays now, and the AHL Utica Devils, about 4,000-seat arena. And that was the venue for the Frozen Four. Now, packed NHL arena sold out, or going back to 2010, 30,000 people at Ford Field and TV all over the place. We talked a little bit about that with Jerry York last week, but really things, you know, you go back 50 years to his college career and then now as head coach for so many decades now at Michigan. What an evolution of the college game during that time.
He's seen it all. I mean, you really got to go back, as you said, you know, the early 60s. That's more than 50 years. And back then, you know, you don't even have to go back anywhere near that far. Go back to the 90s. Go back to the early 90s when teams didn't really have defensive systems. There was no such thing as a goaltending coach back then. Or if you did, it was a pretty rare thing. You know, you look at goals against averages, and good goalies were putting up 3.2 goals against averages. Nowadays, that wouldn't even get you into college. It's that different. You have guys in the 1.4, 1.5, 1.6 range. Guys, you know, record-setting numbers that are in the low ones in terms of goals. And you have teams that used to score, I think Maine, when they won the national title in 92-93 with Paul Kariya and Jimmy Montgomery and Cal Ingraham, I believe they averaged 6.95 goals a game. 6.95 goals a game. If a team scores 7 goals a game right now, it is an aberration. And we just talked about a Michigan team that obviously has done it more than once this year, but nobody does that. To average that, imagine that you average that. That is just some crazy numbers. So the game has changed even in 20 years. I can't even imagine what we'll hear Red say that the game was like 50 years ago.
I know, Jim, it seems like every week it's a bunch of top 10 teams in the USCHO.com poll, splitting weekends or losing weekends, and a new number one. And this time, first time at number one, Minnesota State. But this has been a remarkably balanced and a remarkably volatile and remarkably muddled season in college hockey. Nobody is really stepping up to stand out above everybody else.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's been kind of a crazy year, and you know, I've almost thrown the poll away. I look at the poll very little right now. I've been looking, even though it's early in the season, I've been looking more at the pairwise rankings, because despite what a poll is saying, you know, that's still an opinion of voters. The pairwise is telling us where teams would be if the season ended today, who would make this tournament and who wouldn't. And I look at the pairwise, and it is kind of a crazy pairwise right now. You're talking Minnesota State. They're number one in the country. They're also number one in the pairwise, and they've been there since, I believe, Saturday night. After Friday night's games, they moved into that number one spot. A 16-4-1 record, but they have an unbelievably strong strength of schedule. And thus their RPI is very high. This is a team that is playing good enough hockey. They don't have the best winning percentage out there. I guess maybe they do have the best overall winning percentage, tied with Harvard. But this isn't a team that's just running away with it. It's not like they're 20-0-1. They're 16-4-1. A relatively middle of the pack winning percentage, but they've played such a tough schedule. We wouldn't have thought that going into the year when you talk about a WCHA team. We might have all thought that the WCHA might be one of the weaker leagues. That's not the case, and you can just look at that pairwise right now and look at how many WCHA teams are in there. You have Duluth, you have Bowling Green, you have Michigan Tech. They're all in the top 14 of the pairwise right now. Those are some very good teams in that league, and then some strong non-league scheduling that Minnesota State has been able to execute, and thus they're at the top of everything. It's the poll, it's the pairwise. This is a team that is playing good hockey right now. The only team, I believe, in the top 10 to come out of last weekend with 2 wins. So interesting to see if you can sustain, but the Mavericks, and I think they have done a good job over the last couple of years, maybe not being the top team, but they've been one of the better teams in their respective conference, last year obviously winning the WCHA tournament. This is a dangerous team. I would not want to face them as you come down the stretch, particularly in non-league play, particularly in the NCAA tournament.
And again, 5 different teams receiving first-place votes. Well, Jim, I'm going to throw a curve at you, a little bit of one. We didn't discuss it before the program. We've been talking a lot about expansion in college hockey with the addition next season of Arizona State. It's come up a few times. We've talked with Mike Snee on the program from College Hockey, Inc., and people are always discussing, well, what's the next Pac-10 team or Pac-12 team or Big Ten team to make the move? Will there be a few and so forth? Friday night, as he was touring some of the Western New York facilities, they had a chance to talk live on the radio with Atlantic Hockey Commissioner Bob DiGregorio. And one of the things I asked him about was Arizona State and the change of the landscape. And the follow-up was, well, what about your league? Is there anything going on there? And he said, actually, yes, we are talking to a school behind the scenes, and we expect to add a team to our league in the next two seasons. So that, again, will open up some speculation about who in the East or perhaps the South or Southeast, somewhere along the Atlantic seaboard, is looking to join. I talked to a couple of colleagues afterwards. The name of University of Rhode Island is coming up again.
Yeah, and every conversation I've had really for the last 3 to 4 years, and it might be with people inside and outside of Atlantic Hockey, is that URI is very close. They want to take that step. They'd like to make that that leap to Division I hockey. They have a relatively good club program at this point. If they can do it, and if they can do it within Atlantic, I think it makes a ton of sense. Geographically, you have a number of schools that are a short bus ride away, and you know, a number of other schools that are a little bit of a longer bus ride away. You don't have to, except to play Air Force, you don't technically have to really even get on a plane to play in that league. I'd rather fly from Rhode Island or Boston area to Robert Morris and Mercyhurst, but you don't have to, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great fit. You know, I've heard the name St. Anselm thrown around as well, and they do, I believe, have a new athletic director there. They have a good enough facility there. It's relatively new. I'm going to say about 6 or 7 years old, maybe even less than that, maybe 5 or 6 years old. That could be another place that, given the right funds, could expand. I don't think that any of these schools are going to be doing it with the pomp and circumstance of Arizona State. I think Arizona State is trying to go in both feet into the water. They're taking an approach very similar to what Penn State did. They are approaching this as, we are trying to compete for a national championship within the first 10 years. I don't think that URI or St. Anselm or anybody that's going to go into Atlantic goes in with that mentality. I still believe Atlantic has a cost containment structure to it. But I do believe that if you come in at those leagues, why not try to be competitive? And competitive in that league doesn't always mean being the number one team in the country. Sometimes it means being the number 20 or 25 team in the country, but still competitive, getting national attention, getting the right type of positive athletic attention for your university. So I would love to see URI. I think it's a great fit. Makes a ton of sense for Atlantic Hockey, and I think Atlantic Hockey at the same time makes a ton of sense for URI. But there are a handful of schools, and it's not just them or St. Anselm that should be in the discussion block, but I do believe that those are the two schools that should be at the top of everybody's tongue, the tip of everybody's tongue at this point, because I think if there is going to be expansion in this New England area, those are the schools.
The other thing that was interesting, and I didn't even really have to ask him about this, he brought this up. He is advocating that the NCAA, now that the window has closed on Division III teams playing up to Division I, that they level the playing field, and really that only affects two men's programs and two women's programs, that the men's program along with the women's program, last year's national championship for the men with Union and then RIT are the only ones who are not grandfathered, and he called for the NCAA to change that and allow everyone who plays up. It does affect other sports in different areas, allow them to offer scholarships the same way as everybody else. I'd be curious to hear what they would say about that at Union. They're a little bit down from last year, but they put together a national champ without scholarships.
Yeah, and we have to be really careful when we use that word, without scholarships. I guess Division III schools, I don't understand totally how their financial aid system works. You know, but I'm just going to throw an example. If I'll use Boston College, a national power, they are allowed 18 scholarships. If they were to give out financial aid to any player, and I'm talking financial aid, this is stuff that these players qualify through the basis of their parents' tax return. It might be some academic scholarship, anything that's in there. Any sort of aid that is given to a student, if you give out scholarship, counts against your 18 scholarships. So you might, as a program, have budgeted for 18 full tuition, full room and board, full meal plan, all the fees in your athletic budget. You won't have to use it if somebody gets financial aid. If you are at a school that gives zero scholarships, nobody ever counts the amount of financial aid you give. So you hear schools, I believe Holy Cross was always one, that they would say, oh, we don't give scholarships. Yes, they don't. But every time a player goes in there, and I believe they, if I remember the days of covering that team more actively, they had four scholarships they could give out every year to a Canadian student. It's not bad that Canadian students also tend to play hockey, so those four scholarships are used almost every year on hockey players. None of that.
But you
got to
be careful there too, as you've seen with a number of schools getting sanctions for that.
Right.
But if they don't give it out in proportion to the student population at large.
Right. Right. But what I'm saying is that when you start counting, some of those schools and some of those programs could end up giving out more scholarship and financial aid than, say, a Boston College does. So I understand the woe is me approach and say, hey, some of these schools I'm sure really do have the problem with, hey, we have the money, we'd like to give it out in terms of athletic scholarship. We can't do that because we are a Division III union, you mentioned as one of them. Maybe that is how they work. We don't get to see their books. We don't get to see the back office on how these schools operate. I just do caution the feeling too bad for some of these schools because
they could be actually in a better position
than we think they ever could be. And if they were actually granted the ability to give out scholarships, I think sometimes some of these schools might end up actually taking a hit, believe it or not. So I think it would be good to get everybody on the level playing field, have everybody playing the same game.
Yeah,
in terms of how scholarships are delivered and distributed. The lack of that is almost what might be the biggest problem right now.
Yeah, I think if you ask certain people or if you make the statement that you made, they would probably dispute it. First of all, you can't give you can't give financial aid to somebody who doesn't qualify for it.
That's absolutely true.
An athletic scholarship to a player from a wealthy family, for example.
But you could only recruit people that would qualify under your financial aid system.
Right. So let's see how many poor smart kids we can find and get into college.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of a crazy formula, but it does exist, and I've actually had coaches that were under the grant and aid as opposed to the scholarship model explain the whole thing to me and say, hey, we're actually better off. Sometimes we just want to keep our mouths shut and be careful what we wish for in terms of increasing scholarship. Those are the coaches that actually, when Atlantic Hockey was at 12 scholarships under the MAC structure in the beginning of Atlantic Hockey, that were saying, hey, let's keep it at 12 because they were given 20. So it's a really convoluted conversation, but an interesting one to see. I personally, as I said, would really like to see it just become a very level playing field, that everybody plays the same game, everybody plays by the same rules and restrictions, and that scholarship versus financial aid are always leveled between every one of the 59 and 60, or however many schools there could be someday in Division I hockey.
Well, just quickly before we go to break here, you mentioned pairwise rankings. Anything surprising in that to you right now? Anything sticking out? One thing I notice is Bowling Green at number 5, and we'll be talking with Chris Bergeron in a few moments.
I think on that side, that was one that caught my attention, was how high Bowling Green was. They've had a great year. They only have 3 losses. When you look at teams across the country, Harvard has 2. Everybody else has a minimum of 3 in every program across the country. They have played a lot more games than Harvard has, too. So I'm pretty impressed with their results. And I think that that's starting to speak for itself. When you put up that record, it doesn't matter what the pollsters say, because those are just people with opinions. This is a scientific mathematical system that is actually ranking teams based on how they have done against their schedule. And I think that that proves that Bowling Green has done very well. I think maybe the team that a lot of people weren't ready to see on the outside and very much on the outside looking in is Boston College. They're sitting at 20. They've played some pretty darn good hockey of late, but 12-7-2 has still not gotten them inside the top 16. So there's a lot of teams, and we'll talk to Red Barons in Michigan. They had some struggles down the early part of that season. They're now at 12-7-0. They're 19 in the pairwise. So there's work for a lot of these perennial powerhouses to do to get themselves in the field. You're talking we're in mid-January right now. For the most part, you really have 8 to 9 weeks left before the pairwise becomes a reality, and the day that the pairwise actually counts and matters, and that's after all of the tournament games have been played and we're heading to the NCAA selection show, that day is not that far away, and there's a lot of teams that are going to have to play some really good hockey over the next 8 to 9 weeks to find themselves in the NCAA tournament.
Well, with that, Jim, let's take a break. We'll be joined in just a few moments by Bowling Green head coach Chris Bergeron, and that'll be when we return here on USCHO Live from USCHO.com.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. From U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com.
The traditional light bulb, a groundbreaking invention in 1879. It's time we switched to longer-lasting Energy Star light bulbs. They're more efficient than the old bulbs, like a text message is more efficient than a carrier pigeon. And they cut down on our energy costs. Because in our own groundbreaking age, we deserve a light bulb that saves us some cash. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
College hockey offers fast-paced action with the unmatched atmosphere of a college campus. Experience the passion and excitement as schools from across the country compete for the NCAA Division I national title. College hockey produces exemplary young men, including one-third of all NHL players, like Ryan Miller, Matt Molson, and Brian Gionta. Whether you're a fan of the game or a prospective player, nothing compares to the college hockey experience. Play it smart. Play college hockey. Visit collegehockeyinc.com.
This is USCHO Live.
Welcome back to the January 13th, 2015 episode of USCHO Live. I'm Ed Trefsker along with Jim Connolly.
And last week we were joined by Boston College head coach Jerry York, who has obviously made his way around a few different programs, Bowling Green being one of them. And looking at Bowling Green's history, the last time they were in the NCAA tournament was 1990. Jerry York was the head coach of that team before he headed to Chestnut Hill. The Bowling Green team right now, the Falcons, they are back in the NCAA conversation. A lot of it has to do with their head coach. He's in his fifth year, and that's Chris Bergeron. Chris, thanks for joining us. Welcome, and it has to be very exciting where your team is. A long way to go in the season, but you know, you and I were just talking. It's got to be exciting to be at least in the conversation at this point.
Yeah, it is. First of all, I appreciate you having me, and it's exciting for a lot of people. I mean, there was a lot of very loyal and faithful Bowling Green hockey fans that there were some sad times there, and there wasn't a whole lot of pride with what was going on. And it was really nobody's fault, not one person's issue. It was just the program. And to be back in the conversation, you know, I know they're very proud of that, and our players are proud of it. But as you mentioned, there's lots of hockey to go. I've been through it as an assistant coach with Rico in Miami in a few of those years. We were able to play in those tournaments, and I know how difficult it is to get there. We're trying to take a small picture approach. I know that's coach speak, but we are. We're trying to just try to get better every day, and that sometimes is hard when you got 20, 21-year-old guys who we're pretty proud of what they've done.
We mentioned this is your fifth season there, and just to give some perspective, before you got there, 5 wins in the 2009-10 season. Since you've been there, 10 wins, 14 wins, 15 wins, 18 wins last season, and that was the first season above 500 since going back to 1997. You get 13 wins at this point, just so over the halfway point in the season. Talk about the progression that your club has made year after year, and maybe it's small steps forward, but it now seems that these steps are getting a little bit larger.
Yeah, it's hard to it's almost hard to quantify as you're going through it, with the exception of actually, you know, talking about the number of wins. I mean, your elbows deep and grinding, and we're trying to teach kids how to win when you're losing, and it made it very difficult. I mean, we got pretty good at playing from behind and playing as the underdog and being resilient and things like that, because we had no other choice. Over the last 18 months, it's been, you know, we've had to learn how to play with the lead, or go into the third period with a one-goal lead or a tie game, and last year we weren't very good at it. This year we've been a little bit better with finishing off games or taking a tie game and making that a victory. It seems like it's been a lot longer than 5 years sometimes, but, you know, it's definitely a pat on the back to the players that have been through this program, to Barry Schuette and Ty Agner, who have been with me from the beginning. They're the ones out there in the recruiting world who had a bunch of doors slammed in their face and phones hung up on them in the first couple of years, just based on perception. But it's been something that it's nice to see the progression now. It's nice to be back in the conversation, the recruiting world, and have young people and families want to be part of this program, want to leave Bowling Green better than they found it. It's starting to pay off a little bit. By no means have we arrived. It's just we've been able to be on the positive side of some games, and that creates momentum, that creates expectations, and obviously winning's a lot more fun than losing, and you get a bunch of kids believing in that, and they're willing to do whatever they need to do to make that happen on a more consistent basis. That's good stuff, and we're seeing that happen. I mean, it was a situation Saturday night where we were down 3 goals going into the third, and we were able to find a way, and we proved that we still, when painted into a corner, we do show some resilience, and we show some fight, and that's nice to know that we haven't lost that, even though we've had a little bit of success this year.
We're talking with Chris Bergeron, a head coach at Bowling Green, whose team a very solid start here at 13-3-4. Looking at some of the stats, Chris, and just particularly on the offensive side, not a guy that has flashy points with, you know, 20 plus points. You do have Kevin Dufour, who has 10 goals, but everybody else, you have a lot of guys around 16, 15, 13 points. You seem to be getting a lot of offense from a multitude of players, and I every coach I talk to says they love that balance when they can get that. How important has that balance been to your team?
Well, it's been imperative for us. We you know, this is no disrespect to the people that we have within this program. We've got good hockey players, but we don't have one guy that we can say, okay, go win us a game or go score us a goal. It seems to have been different people, and we want to play hockey for a long time this year. And when you get to those hard situations and those hard games, it's nice to know that you've got a bunch of people that have contributed, not only from a forward perspective, but we've got defensemen contributing. This is kind of sort of the first year we've had defensemen with points in terms of more than just one guy. It's not coach speak for us. You know, we want depth, but we need depth. If we're not having people contributing all throughout our lineup, we're not winning games. And to this point, it's not only been forwards or D, it's been young guys. It's been young guys, older guys. We've had people contributing up and down in terms of the number of years they've been with us, which again is a good thing. That bodes well for the future moving forward, that we're going to have guys that have contributed offensively. And for us to do anything down the stretch here, it's going to have to be by committee. And that's the way it's been at this point. And I don't see why that would change. But it is something that, you know, there's a responsibility that everybody has to continue to push and hopefully even improve on what they've done to this point.
And it hasn't just been offense that has been a committee position. I look at goaltending, and you have 3 goaltenders, a junior, Tommy Burke. He has started 9 games. Chris Nell, a freshman, he's 7 games. And then Thomas Scholl, he's a sophomore. He has 4 decisions. So it seems like goaltending, even though I look at Nell's numbers and they seem to stand out, it seems that you've even been able to approach the goaltending position a little bit as a committee-like position.
Yeah, I'm not sure I've ever been on a program where you've got 3 goalies that can play, and I don't want to I don't want to take that for granted. It's just not the easiest situation. All three of them want to play, want to be the man. I've been in situations where you've kind of got a 1A and 1B, but this is different. And what the competition at that position has done, it's brought out the best in all three of them. Again, I know it's not the ideal situation because you only play a couple of games a weekend and you've got three guys in that competition, but we seem to have made the most of it. They are making the most of their opportunity when called upon. You know, Chris has done a nice job as a freshman, and, you know, he doesn't have the weight of the world on his shoulders. And Tommy Burke was our most proven goalie coming into this year. We felt like, you know, Lake Superior, Mankato State and Ferris State were the two top teams in our league last year, and they had great goaltending. Our goaltending was good. We wanted to make sure it was great this year, and the three of them are really pushing and striving to give us great goaltending. And I think it's been that internal competition that's helped with that.
We're speaking with Bowling Green head coach Chris Bergeron. Bowling Green was one of the charter members of the CCHA back in 71 and the only team to last in the league from beginning to end. And a couple of years ago, with a whole shuffling of the deck for college hockey, you found yourself now joining the WCHA. It's a season and a half into it. How have you found it in the transition to the new league? And generally, overall, what are your thoughts on the so-called new WCHA?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was a CCHA guy. I played in the league. I coached in the league. So to see it go was it was disappointing and bittersweet for sure. We weren't sure what to expect with the WCHA. I think with the success our league had last year, every league game was difficult. We had two teams go to the national tournament and you know, I think have some success. We've got teams all over the rankings this year, not only, you know, the USCHO rankings, but the pairwise rankings. I think the league has done better than people thought it would do, quite honestly. And the competition night in, night out is very difficult. We've done well non-conference. The obvious main difference is the travel. There are obviously some longer trips, and I did not realize how great Bowling Green's travel was in the CCHA. The 3 years I was here, you really got a sense of, man, there's some pretty good trips here where you could go home and home with people and make it a little bit easier on your travel budget. The WCHA travel is a lot different than that, and we're getting used to it. As you said, it's 18 months now that we've been part of the league. We're a proud member of the league. We hope we're a contributing member of the league to help with the success. And we're getting used to life in the new world, and it's been good.
Speaking of travel, what's the difference? Longer bus trips, flights? What's the difference there?
I mean, what we've done is we've kind of gone the East Coast Hockey League route and rented a sleeper bus. So there are longer bus trips. We're still flying to both Alaska schools, but we're trying right now to bus everywhere else. Now we've got a long bus ride to Bemidji coming up in a couple of weeks, so you'll have to ask me later how that goes. But everybody else we've been to, and it's been fine. But it doesn't bring on more class time missed. It just brings on longer bus trips. That's what it does. And you know, we're driving through the night, both Wednesday night and Saturday night. Wednesday night to get there, and Saturday night to get home. And our guys do a great job. They're a good bunch. They travel well. They kind of whatever's given to them, they deal with. And but it's just dealing with some longer bus trips. And then again, we've got, instead of one trip to Alaska every year, you've got pretty much every year you've got two. This year we went to Fairbanks in the first half, and we'll go to Anchorage in the second half. Some teams have chosen to stay up there for 14 days or 12 days in a row. We've chosen to go up and back twice. We'll see how that goes, but nothing as far as excuse goes. I'm not talking about that. I'm not saying woe is us. I'm just saying it's just been different, and it's only our second year. We're still getting used to it.
Chris Bergeron, Bowling Green head coach, is our guest right now. And Chris, you mentioned something a couple of minutes ago just about the national rankings, and obviously your team's there. A number of different teams in the WCHA nationally ranked, but the pairwise rankings right now, you know, if the season ends today, there's three WCHA teams in the tournament. You liked the fact that you got two in last year, obviously, but what would it mean to continually grow the number of teams from your league? I think when this whole restructuring happened, people looked at the WCHA and just said, oh, it's going to be so weak. But the reality is that there has been some strong play out of your league, some strong out-of-conference play. There has to be an impact in terms of recruiting and everything else that goes along with running a team in college hockey.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I mean, we knew we weren't doing our part last year by not being a part of the national tournament, only having two teams there, and we hoped that we were going to continue to improve our program so we could do our part for ourselves and for the league. But it, you know, there was a sense that the WCHA was kind of the leftover teams and a mishmash and kind of a thrown together league. And obviously, I don't want to say we took offense to that, but those are some pretty proud programs in that conversation and teams that were pretty darn good at the time. We felt like we were going in the right direction, and I know some other teams felt the same thing. So to be in that conversation and doing as well as people have done non-conference, and knowing that that's a very strong conference top to bottom, strong coaches, strong teams that play hard every night and so on, it's a lot of pride for the league, quite honestly. And we're, I know I speak for ourselves and all the coaches in the league, we're happy that we're in that conversation. We know there's lots of work to do, and each and every individual program of the 10 has a responsibility to themselves and to the league to represent. And I think to this point, we've done a decent job with that. But like I say, there's lots of work to do this year, but this isn't necessarily just a this year thing. We want to be in that conversation with hopefully 3+ teams every year. And with that being said, I know that's a mouthful because it's very, very difficult. The competition in college hockey is high. But that's something that, we want to prove to everybody that it's a formidable league and it's a league of 10 very proud programs.
With the change in the league, obviously leadership in the league changed with Bruce McLeod retiring. Bill Robertson takes over as commissioner. How has that leadership helped guide the teams in the league?
You know, quite honestly, it's pretty early in that process yet. I've had a couple of chances to sit down with Bill, and my concern, very selfishly speaking, was what does Bill know or care about Bowling Green? And quite honestly, after spending time with Bill, he couldn't care or know more. He's tried to learn what we're about. He's been on our campus. He's been to Fair State. I believe that he's trying to go to every school. And his resume says he's kind of an old WCHA guy. And I think after meeting Bill and spending time with him, it says he's a new WCHA guy. He knows it's the day of the new world, and we have to figure out how to move forward and be a productive league, not only from the league standpoint, but from all the membership standpoint. So I've enjoyed speaking with Bill and I enjoy working with him further. And again, hopefully being a very proud, strong member of this league for lots of years to come.
Last but certainly not least, before I let you go, a big series coming up this week, Michigan Tech. You're going to travel there, one of the top teams in your league. It's a battle, a true battle of two nationally ranked teams right now. Your thoughts on just that opponent this weekend?
Yeah, we've got a lot of respect for Michigan Tech. We played them 6 times last year, and they were very difficult games, all 6. And this is our only meeting against them this year. It's going to be up in Houghton, and we know that it's going to be very difficult. It's a tough place to play. It's a long trip. It's a very difficult opponent. But again, there's no all that is the reality for us. It's no excuse. It's we're excited about the opportunity to play as a nationally ranked team against a nationally ranked team that has a bunch of implications, league implications, national implications, and our program hasn't been in that situation in a long time. And we're excited to be back in that situation, and I'm really interested to see how our guys react. I mean, they've reacted pretty well to this point, but again, well, I don't think we've played a team like Michigan Tech yet. I know we played Mankato, but that was at home. We had Miami home and home. We've played some good teams, but this is probably our most difficult challenge in back-to-back games on the road to this point in our season. Mel's got a great team up there, and we're excited for the opportunity, but we know it's going to be very difficult.
Well, it should be a lot of fun to watch, you know, for myself from afar. And it's nice to see a program that I know in my early days of watching college hockey was a successful one. It's nice to see it built back up. Chris Bergeron, Bowling Green head coach, great work thus far. And we hope you're part of the conversation for the rest of the season. It would be a lot of fun to see Bowling Green in the national tournament.
Yeah, we hope we're part of the conversation as well. Thank you very much for having me, and I do want to say congratulations to Coach Berenson. I know he's coming up next, and I've been on the losing end of some of those 800 wins for sure, whether it be a head coach, a player, assistant coach, but obviously a huge example for all of us. But congratulations to Coach and his program at Michigan. But thanks for having me, guys.
And you're welcome. That's Bowling Green head coach Chris Bergeron. His number 7 Falcons travel to number 11 Michigan Tech this weekend. We'll be right back with our next guest as Jim has a conversation with Michigan head coach Red Berenson when USCHO Live continues.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com.
Did you know that birthday parties help build confidence in kids?
Yeah. Did you know that giving kids less sugar before bedtime helps them sleep better?
Oh, totally. Did you know that friendly kids have more friends?
Everybody knows that.
Hey, guys, did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
I didn't know that.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is USCHO Live.
Welcome back to USCHO Live for January 13th. I'm Ed Trafsker along with Jim Connolly.
And it's not too often in milestones, the true milestones of college hockey, but we had one last weekend. Red Berenson at Michigan, 2 wins last weekend got him to 800 career wins, just the 4th coach joining Jerry York, Ron Mason, Jack Parker in that rare category. And we are joined by the legend right now. Red, thanks for taking the time, and more importantly, congratulations on such a great achievement.
Well, thanks, guys. I guess if you're coaching long enough, the numbers add up. But I've been pretty fortunate here at Michigan to have a lot of great players and good teams and a good, you know, support staff from our school, and they've been terrific. And you know, we've got every opportunity to be successful here, and so there's every reason to thank everybody around us, really. It's not a one-man show. It's been more of a team effort.
Well, Red, I always hear coaches when they hit these milestones, they talk about some of the phone calls they've gotten. Did you get any special phone calls this week from old coaches, peers in the coaching game that with congratulatory messages?
Well, actually, in today's world, it's mostly emails, but I did get a call from Mike Babcock of the Red Wings, and I've been a big Red Wing fan here for a number of years, and I know Mike pretty well, and so I think he passed 500 last year, and he'll probably pass 800 a lot quicker than it took me. I've been here 31 years, but it was nice to hear from Mike.
X's and O's a little bit to last weekend's games. I got to watch last Friday night's game on television, a very enjoyable game. And the one thing I noticed about your team was just a great never say die attitude. You fell behind early. You came back. Then a five-minute major put you behind again when Minnesota was able to respond. But it just kept fighting back. Has that been a good characteristic of your team this year? And just take us through a little bit of the weekend and just the way your team played.
Well, I can't say it's been a characteristic of our team this year. We're a young team. But we're starting to show good signs in the second half. You know, we had four players at the World Junior Tournament, but our team still found a way to win the GLI. And playing against tough teams like Michigan Tech and Michigan State, who had beaten Ferris the night before. And so we come out of there with a lot of confidence and a lot of players stepped up. And then when the four players came back from the World Junior, I mean, they didn't miss a beat. So we're faced with a great Minnesota team. And it was just one of those games. If you watch the way the game went on the Friday night, and we did fall behind. We took the lead 2-1, and the third period we took a five-minute major, and they scored two goals on that to take the lead. And, you know, normally Minnesota's not going to give up that lead, but we came right back and tied the game right after we killed the penalty, and they went into overtime. One of our freshman defensemen fired a seeing-eye point shot that found its way in the net, and we walk out of here with a overtime victory, and that just gave us the momentum for the next night.
And the next night, seven goals. You know, I think that if you're an opponent and you score five goals, you probably expect to come out with a win. But a 7-5 loss for Minnesota, was the offense just clicking as well as you've seen it this year?
Well, it really was. And again, we give up the first goal of the game. Minnesota came out flying. And then we answered back with one and then two goals in the last minute. To go ahead 4-1 after one, and you'd think, well, that should be enough. Sure enough, 4-2, they come right back early in the second. And by the end of the second period, it was 6-4 for Michigan. And you'd think that would be enough, but Minnesota never gave up, and it ended up 7-5. But it was one of those games that the last shot was going to win the game, it seemed. Both the teams had to change goalies for different reasons. And anyway, it was old-time college hockey. You know, not too often you're going to give up eight goals in a home series and win both games, but that happened this weekend.
We're talking with Red Berenson, head coach from Michigan, just surpassed the 800 win plateau. Red, you mentioned World Juniors, and you were missing quite a number of guys at that tournament. Dylan Larkin really seemed to shine for the Americans over there, and then he stepped right back in and just picked up where he left off at World Juniors last weekend. He's a freshman, he's a young guy, but what has he brought to your team this year in terms of his skill and his offense?
Well, he's just one of those players that he has it. You know, he brings it every day. He's got that extra step in terms of his skating and his speed. He wants the puck. He can make plays. He can score goals. He just seems to make things happen as a freshman. And, you know, we've got some other good freshmen, but he's been a real impact forward. And when he went to the World Junior, it didn't surprise us that he looked so good. And then he came back and never missed a beat. I think he had three goals this weekend, so good for him.
We're speaking with Michigan head coach Red Berenson. Going back to your time as a player and this 31 years behind the bench in Michigan, what are some of the things that you've seen change the most about college hockey during that time period?
Well, the one thing that I've noticed is obviously the improvement of the buildings and the support that schools have got from their administrators and really put more emphasis into hockey and more support behind the program. So look at all the good hockey programs there are now compared to 25 years ago. And look at the rinks we get to play in. And then the exposure, whether it's TV or Internet, certainly the college hockey, you can watch it on TV every weekend now, and it used to be it was a big deal to get college hockey on maybe once every month, but more and more I think the TV networks are picking it up. We're in the Big Ten, and the Big Ten network's done a great job, and so whoever thought we'd be watching college hockey on high def on a regular basis, but so that's part of it. And then the other thing is there's more and more good U.S. players. And the makeup of college hockey has changed. And a dramatic way, where when I played, it was mostly Canadian players here at Michigan, and maybe Minnesota and Boston had more U.S. players, but for the most part, the Canadians made up the bulk of the lineups around the country, and now it's mostly U.S. kids because they've done such a great job in the U.S., and with the expansion of the NHL and the success in the Olympics and so on and so forth, we're seeing a real growth of the sport at the American kids, and like the kids we've got, on some of our best players are all right from Michigan. And then you've got the U.S. development program, and that's been a highlight program, and certainly USA Hockey's done a great job. So I think we're seeing that sign, and then look past the traditional hockey areas up north. And we've had players now from Arizona, players from Texas, California, and there are Division I players now coming out of Florida. So who would have thought?
You've been quoted many times about encouraging players to stay in school until they're ready to make the jump to the NHL and preferably stay for their 4 years if they're not ready. But right now, about 30% of the NHL has come from the college ranks. What does that say for you about the quality of college hockey?
Well, I think it says a lot. And, you know, part of it is that U.S. Development program. And the other part is the development opportunity in college hockey. You know, we all have great facilities. We have weight rooms, strength coaches. We have a great development schedule, if you would. You know, a lot of the European players have come over here, and they play a schedule similar to college hockey, and a lot of good practice time and not as many games and not as much travel. So it's a great opportunity for kids to develop. I think there are kids that are in the NHL that never would have made it had they not come to college and stayed 4 years and given them some time to really become a solid player and mature and get stronger and everything. And then there's some high-end players that have come in for 1 or 2 years and been able to step right in the NHL. So that's another tribute to college hockey.
We're talking with Red Berenson from Michigan. Red, looking at the rest of your schedule, it's all Big Ten from here to the end. The Big Ten Hockey Conference has done a great job. You just mentioned exposure and the Big Ten Network and all that stuff. But what has it done for Michigan and maybe all six of the programs in terms of elevating hockey in those campuses?
Well, you know, all these Big Ten campuses have had a serious program for a long time, except for Penn State. But Penn State came in, and obviously with a new facility and a new program, have had a lot of enthusiasm and immediate success. But I think what it's done, it's made the fans appreciate the fact that we're playing like schools more often. Now, we still played 14 non-conference games this year, and then we'll play 20 conference games. But I think our fans, you can tell the difference. They just love to see a school like Minnesota or Wisconsin or Michigan State come into our building and vice versa. So I think it's been a win-win situation for all these schools.
Well, just a single game this weekend, Ohio State at Ohio State on your schedule. Then some meaty games, Wisconsin, Michigan State, Minnesota, a couple more against Ohio State. It's all Big Ten down the stretch. Red Berenson, we appreciate your time tonight and very much, and congratulations on that 800th win that you got last Saturday night. We hope we'll see you down the road this season.
Well, good. Thanks, boys, and appreciate your time and appreciate the acknowledgement. Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate it, too, and we will be right back to close out this week's episode of USCHO Live in just a moment.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. This is USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com.
College hockey offers fast-paced action with the unmatched atmosphere of a college campus. Experience the passion and excitement as schools from across the country compete for the NCAA Division I national title. College hockey produces exemplary young men, including one-third of all NHL players, like Ryan Miller, Matt Molson, and Brian Gionta. Whether you're a fan of the game or a prospective player, nothing compares to the college hockey experience. Play it smart. Play college hockey. Visit collegehockeyinc.com.
This is USCHO Live.
Welcome back to USCHO Live. I'm Ed Trefsker along with Jim Connolly. Not too bad. Red Berenson and Jerry York in successive weeks here on the program. And a really excellent young coach who's really made great strides with Bowling Green and Chris Bergeron.
Yeah, you look at Bergeron and his wins, and then you have Berenson and York that combined, let me do my math, 1,775 wins combined between the two of them right now. You have to believe that one of those guys, and it's probably York, is going to be the first guy to eclipse 1,000 win, the two most, the winningest active coaches, Berenson at 800 and York at 975. So I love legends, but I also love the young guys. I really love hearing, and we've got so many young faces in college hockey that are having great success right now, and Chris Bergeron is just one of a large club of those type of guys.
Yeah, I do want to mention, because I saw his team play over the weekend, there are two coaches who have been for 31 straight years at the same program, and they played for the first time this year. And the other one besides Red Berenson is Gary Wright at AIC. And it's been a tough haul there over many years, but he has a team that has been improving year after year, even after more than three decades behind the bench. So, you know, whether it's a big program like Michigan or a small program like AIC, there's a lot to be excited about and proud about the whole college hockey landscape.
Yeah, Gary Wright, he's 76th in wins all time, and he's probably top 30 in active coaches for wins. He has been there for a long time. I love some old stories of what he used to do. I know that Jock O'Connelly, the legendary sports writer at the Boston Herald, tells stories of when Gary Wright was playing the D3 days, he would have three goaltenders, and they each played a period, just to be fair. If you were playing AIC back then, you used to get to see a different goaltender every period. And Gary, he was one of the first coaches I got to cover when I started in college hockey as a journalist about 18 years ago, and he's a real true gentleman. So it's unbelievable that he's been there 31 years. The guy still looks young to have been at a school that long, but he's done a great job there.
Well, speaking of looking young, last month, Red Berenson turned 75.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, that's pretty darn good. You have Jerry York, who's late 60s right now, and some of these guys, they just seem timeless. I just can't imagine the day. I guess I never was going to imagine the day when Jack Parker wasn't part of this or when Ron Mason wasn't part of this, but those days have come, and I'm sure for Jerry and Red they'll come as well at some point, but I don't want to see those days. I love these legendary head coaches. They really are a true tie back to the older generation of hockey that can't be forgotten.
Well, it's about time for us to wrap up and head on out. So let's highlight a few of the top games coming up this weekend. BU has a big weekend, of course, hosting BC on Friday and then UMass Lowell on Sunday. And BC, even in a down year, is still a top 20 team, and the rivalry between those two schools is arguably the best in college hockey.
Any time the atmosphere is that high in a game, it's pretty spectacular. I think it was Jack Parker who used to say that these two teams, Boston College and Boston University, could play on a Tuesday afternoon in an outdoor rink and without a single fan in the stands, and you would still have the same intensity that you have every time these guys get together. It's just really true. And, you know, we mentioned BC on, I guess, a down year, but they're now seven games without a loss. Their last loss coming in late November, 5-0-2 since that time. And they've played some
some pretty good opponents. A Northeastern team that's playing a lot better. They played Dartmouth and beat them up at their tournament. Played Michigan and really played very well against them, a 5-1 win. They're playing good hockey right now. They got their guys back from World Juniors. They seem to be clicking, and Thatcher Demko and Ned is playing some solid goals. So I think that this is a very dangerous BC team. They're going to play a very good BU team. And BU, this is almost like the litmus test weekend, because with Boston College and UMass Lowell coming in, these are two teams that I'm sure have been circled on the BU schedule for quite some time, knowing that these are pretty good programs. A big test for the Terriers. That you're really going to see what they're made of this weekend. They're number two in the country right now. Success, they could be the number one team again. Any type of fault, they could be falling quickly, because that is just how difficult this weekend is going to be for BU.
The WCHA, we mentioned this before when we were talking with Chris Bergeron, a long bus trip. They get to try out the sleeper to the UP. Number 11 Michigan Tech hosting number 7 Bowling Green. That could cement or disrupt things in the WCHA this weekend.
I think that's one of the best series out there this weekend. And, you know, hearing Chris talk a little bit about that, this is their true test, because they have played some tough teams. They've played Minnesota State. They played them at home. But this is the road, and the road can be a very difficult place. Now, the one thing I will say about Bowling Green, they have been a heck of a road team this season. I believe they have just one loss on the road all year. That's a record that a lot of teams would like. They are 8-1-2 away from home this season. So maybe that sleeper bus has been something that's been a big benefit for these kids. I know if I was on a bus ride that was that long, I'd be very happy to have a bed. So I think that's a fantastic series. Unfortunately, the lack of television exposure for that league, we won't get to see that one on TV, but that is one I'd love to be a fly on the wall in Houghton for that one, because Bowling Green and Michigan Tech, you wouldn't have thought 3 years ago that would be considered a marquee matchup. That this year is a true marquee matchup.
Also in the WCHA, Minnesota State, they're the new number one, so they've got the USCHO monkey on their back. But
bullseye, monkey, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah,
and then you have to play Ferris State, a team that everybody knows is better than probably they've performed this year. So could the curse be going for one more week? Who knows?
A couple of good games for C.J. Mott. Who knows, right? And then in non-conference play, number 12 Quinnipiac takes on number 20 Merrimack. And after seeing Merrimack play a couple of times this year, it seems to me that they could beat anybody or maybe even lull to sleep anybody.
Yeah, a pain in the butt team to play. That's the only way I can describe them. They don't, at least when we saw them, we both saw them out at the Mariucci, and they don't exactly come after you and attack, but they also know how to play defense. They know how to. They have a great goaltender in Rasmus Tjernan, and they are a dangerous team, and that's why they have had success this year, number 20 coming into this, and they're going to face a very hot Quinnipiac team. It's going to be a two-game series, a home-and-home series, so another one to keep your eye on. Somebody has to come out of that weekend with some blemishes, I think. I don't think you're going to see two ties with those type of teams. I just want to see if Quinnipiac's high-tempo style is a good match for Merrimack or not. I thought that they did very well against Minnesota. I thought they did very well against UMass Lowell. Quinnipiac, very similar to those teams. Will that be the test that they need?
One other pair of games or weekend of games I want to mention, just because of how remarkable it is for a lack of ranked teams, and that's Cornell and Colgate heading from Central New York to the Capital District to take on Rensselaer and Union. The only ranked team among those four right now is number 15 Colgate.
And I think that you probably have better teams than you realize in all of that. I look at the pairwise, like I said earlier, Cornell not having the greatest year. They've got a lot of ground to make up. They have the talent to do it. Union, we know, has the talent to do it. I don't think I had high expectations for RPI this year, and they really haven't showed it. I think that they're the one team of those four that might be truly a little bit down. But I think that Union and Cornell, both very dangerous in that four-team travel pairings matchup.
Well, it looks like you can watch up to about 7 games live this weekend. You were mentioning TV. As I went through it quickly, it looks like 4 different games on Friday and Saturday available on cable where I live. So, Like Greg Berenson said, can you imagine watching college hockey in high def? Who would have thought it?
I had a rare Friday night off last weekend. I'm actually going to get a Friday and Saturday off this weekend before I have a game on Sunday. I look forward to it. I thought it was great last Friday night to sit here and flip back and forth between three different hockey games, all on nationally televised stations. So we've come a long way in the college hockey world, and it's, let's reap the benefits and make sure that these guys get some great ratings.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's edition of USCHO Live. If you missed part of the program, you can catch it via podcast, and you can find that link in our website, uscho.com. So, Jim, I hope you enjoy the hockey this weekend. I have a rare weekend off, so I'll be watching some stuff on TV myself.
Get that TV out, get the DVR out if you have to. Let's watch some good college hockey.
We'll catch you next time on USCHO Live.